contemplate taking care of disasters in Bristol Bay for one type of business, we might be able to contemplate it for another. And I had the same thought that you did there, Senator Parnell, that, that we may be only gilding the lily by putting this sort of language on it. I just knew that there was concern, and felt that that might be a way to address it. Senator Ellis? Started to say
I wish I could read the minds, but I wouldn't want to offer the amendment and put people on record in a certain direction, if there's not a chance of it passing, so.
That's kind of my thought.
Yeah.
We have adopted the committee substitute for purposes of discussion. What's the pledge of the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Miller?
I would move the new version for Senate, or House Bill 116 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? There being no objection, move from committee with individual recommendations. Some of you have been very patient. It's my understanding we've now extended the teleconference, and we do have people that have been waiting, just as you have here in this room, on Senate Joint Resolution Number 26, or Senate Concurrent Resolution 26. The pardon?
Yeah, budget closeout in here, or is it somewhere else? There's a 330 Economic Development budget closeout, and I thought it was in here.
I don't know. I don't sit on that one.
I do, and I don't know where it's supposed to be. I'm lost.
Not in the budget, because next is resources over there. So it might be in the...
Do we have another sign-up sheet over there, Jim, that you might hand me? SCR 26.
It's only one I see.
Wilson, you got on both of them. I'll put...
Right list this time.
You're up, kid.
All right.
Go for it. Let me, before you start, make a couple introductory comments. The purpose for which the committee filed this resolution was that there has been significant discussion ongoing both between the administration and various members of the legislature concerning the prices paid for fiber optic cable rights of way. It's my understanding today that we have an ongoing investigation being conducted by Charlie Cole as an independent counsel looking into a transaction involving such a right-of-way agreement with the Alaska Railroad. That right-of-way agreement, my understanding is, was an attempt to acquire an exclusivity of right-of-way on behalf of that carrier. Now, whether or not that actually worked or did not work, I guess the courts will probably tell us. However, the price paid along the Alaska Railroad was 50 cents a foot. From the information that I have reviewed, a right-of-way across DNR lands has been negotiated, and that's why Commissioner Shively is present to talk to us, for 6 cents a foot on DNR lands, 50 cents a foot on state park lands, and then apparently federal agencies are charging all sorts of different fees also. The primary concern that I had as chairman of this committee was, what is the state policy? Why are our agencies charging different amounts to different people? And is there some continuity that should be established? And why are we not utilizing some fair market principles in determining what a right-of-way should be worth so that there would be a level playing field for all members of the telecommunications industry and of other businesses, utilities, and industries that may need access to our rights of way. And I wanted to just make that introductory statement. That's why I brought up the resolution. Senator Pierce?
Senator Taylor, I have an Economic Development Budget Subcommittee closed out at 3:30, and I'm a member of the subcommittee, so I have to go. So
no problem.
I only can get it closed out, but just let me put on the record that my husband is one of the board members and an officer of one of the companies that has at least one right-of-way across state public lands, and the company could be in the future affected by whatever the state does on rights of way.
Either or, yeah.
Any direction.
Understood. Thank you very much for making that disclosure. I think it's appropriate, Senator Pierce. Appreciate it. And sorry you couldn't stick around. Wilson, why don't you go ahead?
All right. First of all, I've appreciated the opportunity so far to learn more about workers' comp than I had planned today. And that was worthwhile, and I thank you. And I won't say that I'm here to answer every question that you've raised. I'm believing I can address some of them, and I will attempt to do that. Thank you, Chairman Taylor and members of the committee, for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Wilson Hughes. I am Executive Vice President and General Manager of GCI. I would like to provide input with regard to Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 26. In the 28 years of building facilities throughout Alaska, I have never seen a utility or its agent promote a higher rate for state right-of-ways. I find utility testimony on this subject to be the first of a kind. GCI is building a new fiber optic network that connects Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Seattle. Our scheduled completion is set for the end of 1998. There is a handout that we'll catch up with you that describes that system and generally gives you an overview and a picture of it. You may have already seen it. The system will cost approximately $125 million and will bring additional bandwidth and in turn additional telecom products and services that we believe that there's a strong demand for. Additionally, there's a company called WorldNet and UNet that has also announced its intent to build a system connecting generally the same population centers. Specifically with regard to SCR number 26, the proposed resolution states the Alaska Railroad has obtained a right-of-way lease from fiber optic cable providers based on market value. We believe that the rate paid by the Alaska for the Alaska Railroad right-of-way by the Alaska Fiber Star Group is based on the exclusive use of the highest value portion of the right-of-way, the need not to provide additional conduits for future users, optimum construction conditions, a single contiguous landowner, and a negotiated procurement process. Proposed resolution further states that it appears that the Department of Natural Resources supports fiber optic cable right-of-way pricing policies that fail to meet or fail to seek lease terms based on market value. After a lengthy negotiation with lots of help from interested parties, DNR and the Division of Parks have tentatively agreed to lease approximately 18.5 miles of right-of-way to the Chugach State Park at a rate of 50 cents per lineal foot to GCI. Additionally, GCI will provide two extra conduits for future users, thus avoiding re-entry for construction purposes, trail improvements, inspection costs paid for by GCI, and a non-exclusive use of the right-of-way. Regarding the submerged portion of the right-of-way, DNR has issued at least two leases previously during the past 6 months for fiber optic cables in the submerged lands at the historical rate of $100 per acre. GCI anticipates that this same rate will be available to us. The proposed resolution declares that the Alaska Legislature wishes that the state provide a stable and appropriate regulatory environment to give fiber optic cable projects the best opportunity to compete on a neutral and non-discriminatory basis. GCI agrees wholeheartedly. Our current fiber project and others in the state were developed and financed based on historical standards for right-of-way pricing. The policy and method used for 30 years are our basis for attracting additional capital to invest in Alaska. If the legislature wishes to change the law, I encourage an open and well-thought-out process. Changing the current approach to right-of-way pricing needs to take into account the state's approach to encouraging development of much-needed infrastructure and the changing competitive telecommunication structure. Today and in future fiber cable projects, they will be owned not only by non-long-distance companies, but also by long-distance companies. Some of the legislators have expressed strong feelings about the need for competitively neutral, non-discriminatory, and consistent right-of-way pricing. We have that today. Further discussion and resolution only serves to delay and confuse those of us that are attempting to build a competitive fiber system in Alaska. To conclude, GCI is interested in paying market rate is intending to pay market rate on both the Chugach State Park and the submerged portion of its right-of-way. The legislature would like to explore new legislation to change the current method of right-of-way pricing. We would appreciate an opportunity to be part of the process. Thank you very much. Any questions?
What basis do any of us have to explain to the public the difference between the 50 cents charged by the railroad and the 6 cents charged by DNR?
The 6 cents that I'm aware of that's charged by DNR is from anywhere from tidelands to several hundred feet, if not 1,000 feet underwater. At $100 an acre for that property that is completely submerged versus property adjacent to the end of the tie on the Alaska Railroad, I find it hard to make a comparison of price, particularly when you have exclusivity off the end of that tie on a specific segment, as I call it, the optimum construction area on the railroad. So it's grossly different. One's obviously above ground. One is below the surface of the water. The demand for each is varies.
Are there different rates being charged for crossing dry land?
Yes. To my knowledge, there is a DOT rate. There is an Alaska Railroad rate. There is a mental health lands rate. There is a University of Alaska rate. There is a park rate. There is a Forest Service rate. There is a Corps of Engineers rate. And I probably can come up with a longer list, but those are for starters.
How are those rates established? I mean,
I'm believing each one is enabled through different types of legislation, different regulations, and they're each attempting to comply with those different regulations.
I mean, each of these departments of ours have passed a regulation on what they're going to charge? I'm confused.
Yeah, I suspect Commissioner Shively can shed some light on it. From my point of view, as we look at each of the regulations, we are being driven by a different regulation, a different set of rules on each of them. On the submerged portion, there was 2 leases let within the last 6 months that involved fiber optic cable that are at the $100 per acre rate. We're, I'm believing, at least the third applying for that.
And parklands have been routinely going at 50 cents?
To my knowledge, we're the first to ask to lay a fiber optic cable in parklands.
Why didn't you get a 6 cent rate? Or 10?
We weren't very good negotiators.
So it's whatever the department or the agency can negotiate for?
I'm believing the regulation guided them to look at market value, and obviously I argued for a lower rate, which you can appreciate, and 50 cents is the rate we ended up with. On a non-exclusive basis with providing the additional conduit, as I described, which avoids future entry for further fibers.
Any other questions, Senator Miller? Senator, okay. Thank you very much, Wilson. You hang around.
I will. Thank you very much.
Sorry if it's wrong, get to it. That's all I had signed up. Commissioner, did you want to give us some explanation of where we're going on this subject?
Only if you'd like, Mr. Chairman.
I'd love to hear from you.
Chairman, for the record, my name is John Shively. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Let me try to sort of set the stage briefly, and then I think it's probably most productive if you answer questions. There are in state government at least 6 entities that I know of that have the opportunity to lease for fiber optic cable. They are the university, the Mental Health Land Trust, the Alaska Railroad. 2 parts of DNR are Division of Lands, our Divisions of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, and then the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. All of these entities are sort of driven by different enabling legislation and different actually goals in terms of what they do. And I think what I'd like to do is sort of start from what I consider the bottom of the totem pole and work up, and that's DOT. DOT is basically, as I understand it, and we have people from DOT here to correct me by air, but they basically don't charge for the right-of-way itself, they charge a processing fee, and this is set by legislation that has been passed by the legislature, and their processing fee is basically capped at $2,900 a permit, one-time fee. The department has traditionally, for rights-of-way across public lands issued by our Division of Lands, charged $100 an acre, which equates to about 6 cents a linear foot, depending on the width of the right-of-way. And that, and we have chosen to continue that, and actually that is both on land and subsea. And it's basically the value of that part of the bundle of rights of land ownership that we're leasing. We're not leasing the whole land, we're leasing a use of the land. The Division of Parks has, I don't think, ever negotiated a utility right-of-way until now, and we wouldn't actually be negotiating this one, except for the fact that there's an existing utility line through Chugach State Park that was in existence before the park was formed. We would probably not have been interested in putting a new utility corridor through the park. It is my personal opinion that park lands have a higher value, they've been set aside, and that's why we negotiate a different way. We had no rate experience as we did with the Division of Lands. The Alaska Railroad, I think, has already been discussed. They are a quasi-business organization. They negotiated their arrangements. Why and how they negotiated is unclear, although we believe that if you looked at a different way of valuing the right-of-way than we have traditionally, which is looking at it from a use value as opposed to the value of the right, as we have traditionally done, that probably we could have justified at least asking for 50 cents a linear foot. We decided not to do that. The university and the Mental Health Land Trust are somewhat separate. They generally don't have long corridors, so they have, I don't know if the university's negotiated any fiber optics arrangements. I believe the Mental Health Trust has negotiated one or two, but they're pretty small pieces of land. So the problem, the legislation or the resolution suggests that we try to be stable, that we, as the Constitution suggests, treat all persons that are similarly situated equally. I think we've done that. There are different situations, but so if somebody comes to us, the Division of Lands, whether it's FiberStar or North Star or GCI, they're going to get the 6 cent rate. They go negotiate with the railroad, a different entity, they'll go whatever the railroad negotiates. So I think we've met the constitutional standard that you've suggested here. Is it competitively neutral? I think it is, again, because we're dealing with the same rules on the same kinds of land, and people can choose what lands they want to go across. They may have different reasons for wanting to choose the railroad versus DOT versus us. If the legislature would like to stabilize this rate at a higher rate, more like the railroad, for all of state government, then you're going to have to act legislatively because of the situation that DOT finds itself in, where they cannot charge. The governor suggested in his previous letter to the four finance co-chairs, in response to a letter they sent me, that we would be pleased to work on such legislation if the legislature so desires.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Questions? John, is this the policy? Is this policy a new policy, or has there been any debate within your organization about whether it should be market value driven or just a fixed number?
There has been a lot of debate within our organization. We've had numerous meetings between myself and the Division of Lands, Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation about what would be appropriate rate for the Division of Lands, whether they should change their traditional way of doing this, even to the extent that I asked the division to draft a policy statement that I could look at to see what it would look like if we did go to a 50-cent rate. Now, we never made a decision to do that, but we did draft such a memorandum. And we ultimately decided not to stick with what we've traditionally done. So actually, it's what we've done, what we've decided to do here is what we've traditionally done. To change it to the 50-cent rate would using a new kind of valuation system, which we have not traditionally used. Now, market rate, I'm not quite sure. I'm a little confused by that term. What you mean, we believe we have a market rate in terms of the way we determine the value of the right. The other way to do it is determine the value of the use. And this is much more technical than I'm probably capable of doing. We have never valued anything based on that kind of appraisal methodology for rights of way in the state's history. If the legislature thinks it's good policy to do that, certainly we can work with the legislature to adjust both our law and perhaps DOT's if that's the legislature's desire to provide for that. But at this point, it's an option, and it's an option we've never used before.
It just seemed that we have used a similar formula when it came to making decisions about oil in various oil leases, oil in the ground, oil to be recovered or not to be recovered, for making some significant changes in other state policy as concerned other state assets. And it seemed like we attempted at least to find out what that value of that thing was.
Well, of course, the initial value of leases is sort of set for oil and gas leases set a much different way, because we go out and we competitively seek bonus bids on those leases. It's not a situation with right-of-ways, really, where you can set a competitive situation because people come in at different times. In terms of, you're talking about 207, of doing an economic analysis of whether or not a royalty reduction is justified, yes, we do that. That's not really the same thing as what I would consider a market rate, but it is a different kind of analysis. Senator, I will say that, I mean, I think either methodology is valid. We chose one. I mean, and, you know, people can criticize us for choosing that one or support us for choosing that one, and we have both in this case. But we did make that choice, but we have certainly offered the legislature the opportunity to relook at that if they think that the choice we made was incorrect.
Yeah, and I guess that's the reason we're here, is that the governor basically threw the gauntlet at the legislature and said, this is what I've done. If you don't like it, do something. And the only thing the legislature has to go on, basically, aside from the hearing held by our colleagues on the House side, is what appears to me a very diverse rating structure that doesn't seem to have any rational basis at all. It seems to involve more about which agency's land you're crossing and what kind of a deal people have historically gotten out of that agency, and each agency, although it's all state land, wants to treat it as their own little fiefdom when it comes to going across it. It must be terrible for the person that's trying to develop a fiber optic cable to figure out what in the world the price is going to be. And I don't see anything in the process that provides the public with any assurance that they're, I've been told between you and I, John, that there's good reason to have Charlie Cole investigating what occurred over at the railroad, and that's not a fair market deal, and they tried to get exclusivity, but it probably isn't going to work. Well, how in the world can I justify, as a legislator, somebody walks up to me and says, well, if that was a bad deal done in a back room, how'd this one happen?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
tell me how this one happened and how we, I mean, using something called a historical precedent if each agency in its own historical pattern has done something one way or another, isn't certainly a method by which, right now, people are saying the railroad's price is market price, 50 cents a running foot. How in the world do I know that?
Mr. Chairman, even I don't know that, and I'm not sure the railroad knows that. And we, as I said, even with when we looked at using a value that was based on use, we thought that might be 50 cents. Our regulations, if we'd used that rate, would have allowed GCI or Fiber or North Star, both MFS, all of whom have applications in front of us, to come in and do their own appraisal and challenge that, and if it was lower, to come in lower. It is confusing. I mean, we're a public land state. But I think the situation arises in other states. I mean, the New York State Thruway, I think, has one kind of deal for what the New York State Thruway did, which is essentially a state agency of the state of New York, and I believe there are other fiber optics arrangements for other jurisdictions in the state of New York. So this isn't unique, and when you have a situation where the legislature has declared for DOT that they really can't charge any rental rate, just a processing fee, and not only that, as I understand, if they ever move their road, they have to move the fiber optics cable with it. That's by statute. That's one set of things, and then you have the railroad that's a business and the other, you're going to get this. We actually have an even lower rate than what we've charged, which is a rate of 10 cents a linear foot one-time charge. That was also discussed, and of course, you know, anybody who, I think people would have preferred that, some of our customers, we decided that wasn't appropriate, and but we have used that for electrical utilities and others. And you know, I think the tradition in the state has been to try to encourage the development of infrastructure by providing low rental rates on state land. And I think that's been done to a certain extent with hydro projects when we've leased or basically allowed the use of submerged lands for free. It's been done for a number of utilities all over the state, sometimes on the 10 cents a linear foot one-time fee, sometimes a 6 cent annual fee. So it is a little confusing, but that's the situation as it is today.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just other than quote historical perspective, I guess, through these agencies. How do I know, and this is the first time we've ever leased state parkland, I guess, for at least a fiber optic. Maybe we run some other gas lines or something else through those.
It just seems to me that it's arbitrary that whoever's in charge of parks at the time or DNR at the time picks a number, and that kind of becomes the number.
Mr. Chairman,
that could be good. It could be for the state. Could be bad for the state. It could be good for the person putting in the cable. Could be very bad for the person putting in the cable.
Well, I think the difference between parks and what our Division of Lands has done, the Division of Lands has longstanding regulations that provide for this fee that we've charged, and that's what we've traditionally done. But there has been no history in parks. They don't have regulations because they basically don't do this kind of thing. So yes, it was a negotiated figure, and we looked at what the railroad did, which was, you know, the thing that was at least closest. And really, if you look at what's running, the on-land thing that Fiver, at least Fiverstar got, it basically is the same route as through our park for both customers trying to get to Whittier. And we started there. We had some extra things that we required of GCI, as Mr. Hughes indicated. We didn't want the park dug up again, so we're asking them to put in additional conduit. So if other people want to use the park, they can string the cable through the conduit without ripping up the park. That's a cost to them. They will get some credit for that. We also
50 cents plus putting in a conduit?
Yes, extra conduit.
Railroad could have done the same thing, couldn't they? I mean, wouldn't it be handier for the railroad not to have somebody digging up the right-of-way, and they could have said, put in a big conduit, and everybody
get... Absolutely. To my knowledge, that was not part of their arrangement. They also have, however, as I understand it, other parts of the railroad right-of-way that could be leased. It would mean that part of the right-of-way being dug up to lay the cable.
A whole new installation each
right.
time, right?
Right.
Any other questions? From the level of frustration and concern that I've received over the last few days since dropping this one in the process, did the governor not want us to take this up? I mean, he wrote the letter saying that we ought to take a look at it, and if we didn't have any concerns, he'd go ahead at a certain date.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, we wanted to lay the situation out as best we could. I think we've laid out all the information we had. We've laid out both to your committee today and to Representative Porter's committee previously the options we looked at, what the pricing might have been, and have offered if the legislature thinks that there ought to be one single state policy for some or all of the six entities that we would work with the legislature to get that, and we would not finalize any of our decisions till it would be done.
I guess what I'm kind of throwing out here is, like the rest of the body and all the letters I've seen going back and forth from Gail Phillips and all kinds of other folks, where is the leadership on this one? What is the recommendation? We continue with this historical perspective of 6 or 7 different fees and negotiate with whoever happens to be in office at the time?
We are comfortable with leaving different jurisdictions under existing law. We are comfortable with that. That's what we have recommended doing. But we also are not opposed if the legislature sees it differently. The problem that I think, part of the problem that drives this is the fact that if you want to make everybody equal, let's say that you and I sat down here and agreed 50 cents is the best thing for the state, okay? Well, and I actually have the authority to do that in DNR. But if you want a consistent state policy, my friends at DOT don't have that ability. They are prohibited by law, and that's why I think this really is a broader issue than just what we're doing at DNR. It is an issue that is confused because of previous legislation that has driven us towards encouraging utility development in the state by providing low rates for state land. I mean, I think that has been a consistent theme for this state as we've developed, and there's been good reason for that. Now, are we a development enough state now to change that? I think that's certainly a topic that can be discussed, and I would not be uncomfortable, but we've said at this point, we as the administration are not going to make that change by ourselves.
Well, you did.
No, we didn't make the change.
We had a state policy that said utilities should go in at a very low rate. We even have a state statute on it that limits DOT on what they're going to do. Lowest rate we got going, right?
Right.
Then we've got another rate at 10 cents a foot, a one-time charge, and that's primarily been limited to just utilities, like municipalities putting something in, right?
Well, it's required for nonprofit utilities, and then it's allowed for other utilities, required under law.
Some of these folks might have been better off to just buy a utility and then have that utility make the application, pay a 10-cent one-time charge, and gone right across whatever. Or wait a minute, let me ask that. Do all of these different rates have no effect when it's a nonprofit utility that's applying for that permit?
Well, that's an issue, I think, Mr. Chairman, that is coming up because I think there are a couple places now, including Fairbanks, where fiber optic cable may be hung on existing right-of-way, and we have not finalized our decision on whether or not that's allowable without an amendment to the lease. But it doesn't...
I hope none of that right-of-way goes through a state park. They're in for a big shock, aren't they?
I don't know if it's a big shock, but they might...
Well, they've got to be hit with 50 cents a foot annually, aren't they?
Well, in Fairbanks, we don't have a large state park. And again, Mr. Chairman, we would not even be considering the state park if there wasn't an existing utility line all the way through their fallout. I mean, the state park, at this point, is an anomaly for us. I don't think it will happen.
If somebody needed to go through a state park and there wasn't a utility corridor already there, you wouldn't consider it?
I don't believe so.
Well, that does a lot for building infrastructure, doesn't it?
Well, and as FiberStar and others approve, and there are ways around the state park.
Sometimes you get kind of spendy, though. I guess what I was getting at, and I don't know if I got an answer, was the only time the legislature's actually acted, we said set a flat rate and go for it. And the agencies themselves have then come up with various amounts over the years, and this history is what's guided you in arriving at this figure.
Well, that's not, Mr. Chairman, that's not quite correct. For DOT, you have set a policy that says charge for an administrative fee one time. That's law. For us, you said, you can get value for the land. You can determine that by regulation, as we have, and that if it's a nonprofit utility, you're required to, I understand it, charge a 10-cent one-time, 10-cent linear foot one-time fee. If it's not nonprofit, then you can charge something else. We have traditionally charged based on what we think the value of the actual right in the land is. We have, under our existing regulations, as a result of the law that you passed, also the option to value on what we think the value of the using of the land is. We have, and we've never done that before, and we've chosen not to do it now. The railroad has its own authorizing legislation, which probably doesn't say much about right-of-ways at all, but has certainly a responsibility to act as a quasi-business operation. The Mental Health Trust, of course, has their responsibilities to their beneficiary to maximize income, and I suspect the universities finds a similar situation in their authorizing statutes.
That general phrase and having the power to amend, change, and create new regulations, if it's the Mental Health Trust, the university, what would be the restriction 5 years from now to say for those people to come up with a price that's $1, $2, $3 a lineal foot? And yet if somebody creates an entity, nonprofit utility, or goes out and buys a town for the price of the deal worth you guys are talking about, you could buy a whole lot of towns in this state, take over their entire utility. It just seems to me we're all over the board on this subject, John. And why wouldn't we want to obtain some sort of level playing field so as to encourage those people in telecommunications to be able to know that they can pick a route, and as long as they abide by certain safety requirements and depth and all this sort of stuff, depths underground or whatever, why wouldn't we want to encourage them to all do it, and here's a flat rate for the whole Bloomin' State, any piece of land you want to go across?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that sounds good in, when talk about it. In practice, I think it's difficult. I'm not sure that the legislature, for instance, would be interested in setting policy for the Mental Health Trust on something like this. I mean, we've had a lot of difficulties.
The ultimate trustees of that Mental Health Trust. We had to set a whole bunch of policies just to settle up with them last time around. I don't think we'd have a hard time setting a policy.
I think if you feel comfortable with that, then you can do it. I think just as if in many states, fiber optics cable owners have to deal with a whole variety of landowners. I mean, the one thing that's sort of different about Alaska is we have so much public land, there are just a few entities that they have to deal with. It's a great benefit to them, I think, to make things easier, but I think it also helps the state dramatically in terms of our ability to attract people who want to put in things like fiber optic cable for infrastructure. And I don't think that there's anything particularly unique in having utilities having to deal with landowners, even if it's all they're all state entities that have different policies and different goals. That's not troubling to me.
Okay, I don't have any other questions. Others? Do you know if Ms. Amick is available? Or
she was supposed to be on teleconference.
Okay. Jane, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
I've got a copy of a policy draft that you did for John, I guess, on this very question, and that's what I was asking him about earlier when I said, have you had discussions within your department on this? And within that policy statement, on page 2, you state the marketplace indicates that rights of way for fiber optic facilities are quite valuable in Alaska and elsewhere. And then on page 3, when you, under a heading of fair and reasonable compensation, you stated compensation for fiber optic telecommunications facilities on state lands must be, at a fair and reasonable basis, assessed on a competitively neutral and non-discriminatory basis, consistent with this, and I can't tell what it is, and with the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1998. Is it fair to say that you support or supported a market-driven approach to establishing value on state lands for these right-of-ways?
Mr. Chairman, the memo that you are reading from was a draft policy, one of many drafts that was examined by the Division of Land for consideration. And when we stated that it had to be competitively neutral, for example, those are the provisions of the Federal Telecommunications Act. when we stated that it had to be market-driven, that is also an issue that was looked at in terms of what are people, different organizations paying in different parts of the state of Alaska. So what we did was lay out all the options. And as the commissioner stated, we started from 10 cents a foot one time for a nonprofit utility up to whatever is the unknown appraisal of the value and use of lands for a fiber optic cable.
Well, on page 4, your draft stated if the legislature decides not to change that policy during this session, the division of land will grant fiber optic rights of way at the $50 a year rate set out above. In fact, you didn't do that, did you?
No, sir, we didn't. This is marked draft, and that was one option, and another option was selected, which is that unless the legislature directs us otherwise, we will continue with the existing policy, which is $100 an acre, or 6 cents a foot.
I mean, that seems like quite a dramatic difference to me. I would think if I were the person who was applying for the permit, I would be fascinated to know that somebody was dancing someplace between 50 cents a lineal foot and 6 cents a lineal foot, and I might want to encourage whoever that person was to come down on the 6 cent side. What process did you go through? You said you've made many of these drafts. What process did you go through on behalf of the people of the state of Alaska to assure us that we got the highest and best market value for this lease?
Chairman, the process we engaged in with respect to the development of the policy paper, the final of which was produced in March, and which I believe you also have a copy of, was that we evaluated the information from different land owners in the state of Alaska, including the Alaska Railroad, Mental Health Trust, the Department of Transportation, as Commissioner Shively has already indicated, as well as taking a look at the experience of outside jurisdictions located in other parts of the United States, such as the New York Transit Authority or the Bay Area Rapid Transit Authority in San Francisco, and tried to ascertain what have been the experiences of different places around the country with respect to setting the level of compensation for rights of way for fiber optic cables. And in evaluating the range of experiences, it is vast. It is vast in the state of Alaska, but it is extremely vast in the world and in the lower 48. In Anchorage, Alaska, the local government traded a route along the bike trails in Anchorage in exchange for lights, for illumination of that trail system. That was one method of securing a service that was required under, you know, for that negotiation. And by comparison, as you have talked about, the railroad negotiation is authorized at 50 cents a foot, but in fact, it's the rate of compensation is 5% of growth, which is and the 50 cents a foot is the basement of that, so that there are a wide range of mechanisms by which governments and private owners alike have evaluated how to compensate for the use of their lands for rights of way for fiber optic telecommunications.
Yeah, I guess that's my frustration is that they're not their lands. They're not that agency's lands. This is land that belongs to the people of Alaska, and it ought to have some level playing field. The merchant in the business world ought to be able to come to us and know that he isn't going to get negotiated with to be told that we'll give you a right-of-way if you'll put in the right kind of lights. We'll give you a right-of-way if you promise never again to dig up our park, and you have to put in a special conduit that nobody else has to put in so that nobody concerned about the park is going to complain to us. I happened to be down in Miami, Florida about 6 years ago when the superintendent of schools down there negotiated a real good deal on behalf of the people of Florida. This contractor got to build the school, and all he had to do for the superintendent was build a brand new home for him out in the Everglades. I have no idea whether or not these very diverse methods or historical anecdotes about how we're establishing price have anything to do with the reality of what in the world the land itself may be worth. And it seems to me that in your memo, you highlighted that when you said that on page 3 of the draft I'm looking at, that in 1996, Division of Land had its first discussions with a telecommunication company that sought authorization to use state land to lay fiber optic cable, the very subject we're talking about here. MFS, Network Technologies, Inc., agreed to use an appraisal to establish the value of the right-of-way along the route of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez. The appraisal instructions will be issued by the Division of Land, and the appraisal itself will require the Division of Land's approval. Did you do that? Did you actually go get an appraiser to figure out what this land was worth or this right-of-way was worth so that the people of Alaska would be at least protected by having some expert look at it and evaluate it?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to remind you one more time that what you're looking at is a draft. And,
no, I'm not talking about the fact that it's a draft. MFS asked you to do it, and in the draft you say that the Division of Lands will do that, it will require your approval. Did you do that with MSF? Yes, that's MFS, excuse me.
Chairman, at the point in which this time and when this memo was written, we were trying to coordinate with the Bureau of Land Management, who owns the other portion of the right-of-way for MFS. The Bureau of Land Management and the Division of Land were going to jointly prepare appraisal instructions to be able to determine the value of the MFS right-of-way. Since this draft was written, the direction from the governor has been that we will use the traditional method as found in our regulations, which is to assess the value of rights-of-way at $100 an acre. Therefore, the appraisal methodology described in that memorandum will not be engaged in for MFS by the Division of Land, but will continue to be engaged in by the Bureau of Land Management for its portion of assessing the value of the right-of-way for the MFS fiber optic route along the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
Oh, so the governor just made a decision that we're not going to do an appraisal, we're just going to use this flat rate fee. I mean, it didn't have anything to do with value or market or anything else, it's just somebody decided to do it that way. Yeah, John, leap in.
Jane, I'll answer that. Mr. Chairman, again, for the record, my name is John Shively, Commissioner of Natural Resources. The issue was discussed with the governor's office. It was basically my decision, not the governor's decision. The governor was comfortable with the decision that I ultimately made, and because this was a high-profile issue, it was the governor's decision to write a letter answering the four finance co-chairs who had written us a letter, I think, suggesting that keeping the traditional rate was the appropriate route to go at this time. I think if you read their letter, you will find that was at least, I think, part of our, at least part of my decision-making process was some suggestion from the four finance co-chairs that they were comfortable with that.
Yeah, I guess my confusion here is that, Jane, you wrote this draft on February 25, and you did it. You don't mention here in the draft, but apparently because BLM was going to go get an appraiser and they were going to work with you to come up with joint appraisal instructions, are they the ones, BLM, who initiated the conversation with you about why they would like to use an appraiser to determine what the value of this land is?
Chairman, BLM is required to get an appraisal for a fair market value appraisal before it issues a right-of-way. And at the time that we were originally exploring the MFS right-of-way, we were trying to figure out a way to facilitate the development of this facility in Alaska by having all the government entities along the route cooperate with one another. Instead of having one set of rules and one set of structures for the federal part of the land, that we would try and have both the state government general lands and the federal government general lands be appraised similarly. The normal regulations that were in place as of 1996 indicated that the state of Alaska would issue a right-of-way to the division, to MFS, for $100 an acre. That would be the price that was currently established in regulation. What we talked about was trying to do it in a streamlined manner so that the Bureau of Land Management and the Division of Land would use the same numbers.
Yeah, okay, but...
And MFS was going to have to pay for the appraisal.
Well, they're going to have to anyhow, because BLM's not going to do it based on any traditional thing. BLM's not going to call up Clinton to find out from Clinton what he's going to use. That only occurs on our side of the fence, right?
Well, Mr. Chairman...
They're still going to have to do it, aren't they? Get BLM's appraisal paid for, and then pay whatever the price is that appraisal comes up on the BLM sand for federal land to cross, right?
That's correct.
Now, my next question, Jane, is... These people came to you in 1996. You wrote this in February 25th of 1998. I think that's the date. Yeah, you wrote it just about a month and a half ago here. And you didn't know at that point in time, these people's application been pending for 2 years, year and a half at the very least. And you didn't know at that time what the decision was about setting up an appraisal system, and you actually thought the division of your division of lands was going to work with BLM to come up with an appraisal?
Mr. Chairman, it was the co-chairs of the House Finance Committee and the Senate Finance Committee that wrote a letter to the Department of Natural Resources asking us to retain the existing structure as existed in regulations. And that was in February, and I believe that the letter that was written was in response to the request of the legislature to retain the existing normal structure that we had since previously in regulation. So if you're asking me what did I know in February versus what I knew in March, was the legislature asked us to keep the system the way it was, and in March we said okay.
Well, when did you grant MFS its permit?
They don't have it yet. They have what's called an early entry authorization, whereby they have the opportunity to install the fiber optic cable in order to, in the case of the early entry authorization, it was to achieve construction before the snow flew. But the final decision with respect to the right-of-way for MFS, and similarly the final decision for the right-of-way for North Star, and similarly the final decision for the right-of-way for GCI, have not been made. And every company is aware that what we are doing is grappling with the method that we would be using to determine the compensation. They've all been holding their breath while we evaluate this question. Today, unless the legislature directs us differently, the administration will continue with the existing regulations at $100 an acre.
Well, except on state park land, except on university land, except on mental health land, all of which will negotiate apparently with whoever wants to cross their land based on their regulations.
Except on DOT, where you by law have prohibited.
Yeah, except on DOT, where you get a much cheaper rate, right?
Right.
That's the cheapest shop to go to in town, isn't it? If you could just run it along a highway through DOT and never cross anybody else, you're home like a burglar, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that's the Yugo of rights away.
Right. Yugo of rights away. You did say, Jane, that you had been attempting to develop a policy on this where there would be uniform treatment. Is that correct?
No, sir. What we've been trying to do is develop a policy to determine what is the appropriate rate of compensation for general state purpose lands managed by the Division of Land within the Department of Natural Resources.
Oh, you were just trying to determine what policy you were going to set just on your land.
Yes, sir.
There was, you were not attempting to find out what or work with other agencies. You were just working with BLM, I guess, on this one. You weren't talking to Parks. I thought they were right there in your division, but I guess they're not.
Mr. Chairman, clearly the Division of Land worked with the Division of Parks, and clearly the Division of Land worked with the Alaska Railroad in order to try and ascertain what were the policies that were currently engaged in by different land managers. We also talked with the mental health and with the university about how do you guys do it, as well as private sector interests such as Cook Inlet Region Incorporated and other Native organizations that own lands against over which fiber optic cables were being laid. We were trying to gather information about how all the different land owners acted in relation to mostly the changes wrought by the 1996 Federal Telecommunications Act, which changed the playing field for this industry. And all we were trying to do was ascertain to what extent were we in a position to be able to be in sync with the intent of the federal legislation.
Yeah, is that federal legislation what is guiding BLM in doing their appraisal?
No. I mean, the Federal Telecommunications Act doesn't guide whether or not they appraise or what their appraisal is.
What does that act say about what you should get for value?
It doesn't say anything about what you should charge. It says that you should be consistent and that that state and local governments cannot provide obstacles. And we have interpreted that as being consistent is being consistent within each entity of state government. Now, that issue has not been litigated as to whether or not that's an appropriate approach. We are not the first state to have different state entities having different systems. So it could be that someday that issue is litigated if the courts were to find that every entity that was a state entity had to have the same rate. That would change things, and unfortunately at this point would drive us to the DOT rate, because that would be the lowest common denominator.
Well, no, I assume you'd come in at that point with some legislation, and you'd want to work with us to come up with some kind of policy that would affect all state lands, no matter whom they were owned by, what arm or what branch of government, to establish some fair rate or some appraisal system or something.
That were doable. We're going to have people with existing leases, so that's not clear that that would be doable.
Yeah, we might have to give some people some money back or charge some other people some more in the future. I mean, but no appraisal system is currently being worked on, Jane, is that correct? You've abandoned that now?
Mr. Chairman, we have many options under existing law and existing regulations for how we pursue this question. And there, for example, in the statutes, there's a provision that says if this is a unique situation, that the director of the Division of Land has the ability to determine what the value is and set a value, and that the applicant who chooses to disagree with that has the opportunity to therefore go and seek an appraisal to either prove or disprove that the value that has been set is correct or not relative to the market value. So my answer to your question is that we use many methods. The appraisal method will continue to be used in some cases, but with respect to fiber optic cables and the issuance of rights of ways for general state lands, we are at a juncture today where unless you direct us differently by April 24th, we will issue rights of ways across general state lands at the rate of compensation of $100 an acre. After that action occurs, it is my opinion that the state no longer has the opportunity to change the rate. We have purposely not issued any in order to make sure that when we finally issue a right of way, all future applicants will be treated the same when they're crossing general state lands. So the reason why everyone is backed up today is that they're waiting for the state to make its final decision about what will be the rate of compensation. After we issue one, we are, I think, then compelled by the Federal Telecommunications Act to treat all future applicants the same on general state lands.
I think the fact that there are many options available in these unique situations for the commissioner who has control over lands, for the executive director who controls some lands, for the Board of Regents who controls some lands, for Mr. Sheffield and the Railroad Board who controls some lands, that has to be absolutely frightening to anybody out there in the marketplace. Now, once we have, quote, established it, then you're telling me the Telecommunications Act would come in and it would not allow you to pretend that these things now are unique because we've granted some, haven't we?
Yes.
So as a consequence in the future, having once granted one, two, or three, then everybody in the future is going to be locked into those rates.
Assuming the Federal Telecommunications Act stays the same, I would say that that's correct.
Why in the world would we want to put this kind of a system into stone? We may be doing terrible damage to the telecommunications industry, making it far too expensive to ever run cables to some places by this policy. 6 cents may be prohibitive if somebody wants to run a cable from Fairbanks out to Cottesville.
Chairman, we are setting what we think is the best policy given what we know now. And there are, as Jane has stated and others have stated, there are a lot of options. We have chosen one of those options. I think the discussion here has been more not along the lines of bringing the rate down for Kotzebue, but bringing it up. And that certainly is something that is...
I'm not interested in bringing a rate up or down. I'm just trying to find out how in the world anybody ever picked a number in the first place. And I haven't heard a single explanation yet about why the railroad's worth 50 cents, why your land's worth only 6, why the parks is worth 50 cents.
Chairman,
50 cents plus a big conduit.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you have heard some words to that effect. I mean, the $100 is our, in regulation, our belief of the value of the right as part of the bundle of rights of the land. The railroad, we believe, although they negotiated it, looked at the value of the use, a different concept. We took that concept for parks and asked for some additional things for the parks. There will be some credit to GCI that will bring their rate down a little while they pay back some of the extra investment. That hasn't been fully negotiated. But again, I will tell you that I don't think it's any more terrifying for people in the fiber optics industry to have to deal with 6 different entities of state government than it is for them to have to deal with a whole bunch of private landowners if they have to go across a bunch of farms in Iowa or a bunch of different local governments in the state of Florida or a variety of other places where you run into the similar problems of different people having different ideas of what's valuable.
Well, understood, but that's why utilities are often granted rights of eminent domain so that they can cross such lands, and that's why states and governments have rights of eminent domain, and in fact, we have exercised our rights of eminent domain to cross some of these very lands that your department, through DOT, is now selling a right-of-way on, didn't we? We took some guy's homestead someplace, and we drove a road across it. And that's how we got across those private lands that are causing these private utilities in other states all this havoc. But, you know... I guess
Chairman, if you're interested, the Alaska Railroad representatives are here in Anchorage, and I'm sure they'd be pleased to participate in this discussion.
Well, good. I only had a couple more questions for John, then we'll get the rest of the folks on the list here. I would like to know what part of the public process was involved here. I mean, this sounds like something that... every time I turn around, I'm getting told that we need to have more hearings on this, and we need to bring some people in, and let's talk about this, and let's utilize the public process. And I don't know what part of the public process was utilized in any of this. I see memos going back and forth internal, negotiations occurring privately. I don't see anything about the public process here.
Well, the park issue was dealt with. There was a notice given. There were public hearings about the park. Prior to us deciding what the value is, it's my understanding that once that value is determined, and we have a final arrangement with GCI, if we indeed we get one, then that is subject, if not to public notice, at least to appeal to the commissioner or asking for reconsideration if I co-sign with Parks. The $100 an acre was set by regulation. All regulations, as you know, are open to public process. That was set some time ago. It's not a new rate. It's in our existing regulations that have gone through a public process.
Additionally, there was a public public notice issued on both the North Star route as well as the GCI route, as well as the MFS route. They've all been advertised. Although the price was not part of the conversation as much as the routes and what they were, where they were going.
Yeah, I thought those were also somewhat abbreviated, weren't they? Wasn't there a publication and a notice given and then a hearing held very quickly right after that? I mean, this thing was not, let's take 6 months to figure it out and run all over the state and have hearings. This thing was slam bam and it was over with.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not over with yet.
Well, it was as far as the governor was concerned until he got a letter, and then he dumped it back in the legislature's lap and said, if you guys want to look at it, go ahead. If not, I'll issue on the 24th. We're now just a few days away from that date.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I think the intent of the letter was to say if the legislature wanted to work on this, the 24th is not a magic date. I mean, we would like to get this done because I think the companies, MFS, GCI, and North Star all would like to know what they're going to pay and have a final decision. But if the legislature's working on this, I'm not going to issue the permits out from under you. We will work with you right to the end of the session if that's your desire.
I think I want to know not what they're going to pay. I want to know why they're going to pay it.
Mr. Chairman, I have told you why they're going to pay it.
Good. Thank you, John. Steve, you're up on the teleconference list first, and I didn't have anyone else in the room signed up to testify. Let me just ask where you start. Are there other people in the room who would like to testify on this resolution? I don't see a lot of hands going up. Steve, you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Steve Guyana. I'm the Director of Marketing for Knauf Telecom, and MFS is our contractor and shareholders in the company. I sent down a letter. I assume it's you have it by now, and I won't read it. There's other issues in the that I'd rather address now. First off, we support the letter of the governor back to the legislature. We read that is that the governor supports the historical pricing. We understand that historical pricing to either be 6 cents a foot or $100 an acre, of which, when computed, are very close to each other. Our issues are not with with the university, which our fiber runs across, or any of the federal lands as of yet. I'm not sure. I assumed that our BLM permit was being taken care of. Maybe that's wrong. But we support the historical patterns. We believe that if, in fact, we start setting market rates, there'd be very little infrastructure being built, especially if we start with rates of 50 cents a foot. We understand that the rate of 50 cents a foot along the railroad corridor was for an exclusive right. I guess we could have done and asked for the same thing. We did not. We opted for the 6 cents a foot. To quote you a half hour ago, that it must be terrible for the fiber company wanting to do business. And the truth is that it was not until the issue of 50 cents a foot came up and we started comparing exclusivity with common use rights away. We're happy with the 6 cents a foot. It's our understanding that we have the right to go in and do an evaluation of the right of way for if we do not agree with the cost of that right of way. So far, we've chosen not because we've assumed that we would continue on the 6 cents a foot cost. again, we support what the governor has done. We support his letter. We read that we'll price on historical value, and the comparison between the 50 cents for exclusivity and the 6 cents are comparing two different things. That's all I have, sir.
Yeah, understood, Steve, and I don't think anybody has yet suggested those things aren't different, but what price do you think you're going to pay BLM for their land?
Don't know. I can't answer that right now.
How's that price being established?
I have to go back and ask our contractor that. I know we do not have issue with it.
Well, isn't it being done, as I talked about with Ms. Jane Anvik, isn't it being done on an appraisal basis based on fair market?
I don't think either one of us know right at the moment. I cannot answer that for
at least that's the way Jane wrote her memo that I was reading back to her, was that as far as she knew, they were going to have an appraiser do it, and that appraiser was going to base it on market value, and that she, in fact, was up until the 25th of February, she at least thought she was going to be assisting in the drafting of regulations and instructions to the appraiser, Steve. So I just assumed that since you're the one of the people that may be impacted by that, that would, you'd know how that might happen.
And we also understood that those were drafts, draft suggestions, and that's why we support what the governor has put out so far.
Well, on her part, it was a draft. On BLM's part, they're serious enough, they're probably going to do it. I'd like to hear from you or from somebody in your company, if you could, as to the manner and method by which BLM lands are going to be, you're going to gain a right-of-way across those. And if somebody knows that, I'd really like to know how you're getting to a price with BLM, because apparently you're satisfied that that's moving well and that it will reach an appropriate result.
Yes, sir, and I'll get back.
How are you doing it with the university lands? What price per foot are you paying there?
I can't answer that one either, because we're permitted already, and that has not been an issue within the company. So when you ask me
am I asking for proprietary information, Steve? I don't mean to.
No, I don't think you are. I think I'm just ignorant. I don't know what that is right now.
I feel like the Lone Ranger, I'll guarantee you. I'm ignorant as all get out about this stuff. But if you could let me know what the university price is, I'd appreciate that too, especially if it's different, or if the university is also doing it based on some historic process.
Well, I'm sure that it probably is different, but when we start talking about university lands or state park lands, there's very little land to go across. So we probably would not have contested if we thought it was reasonable to start with. You know, I don't think that we would have built a fiber through a state park if there was a road going through it. We would have picked the road because we understood what the cost of doing business was there. When you have a choice, we would take the lower cost.
Sure.
The business is right now with Alyeska, as you know, and we share that right-of-way. And I'm sure Alyeska pays the price for that same right-of-way. And anybody else that comes along will have the opportunity to use that right-of-way.
Yeah, my only concern there was that, Steve, even though the land that you're crossing for the university, as an example, may be a small amount, and even if they charged a dollar a foot, it would be just a token payment, but you need to have that little number of feet to get there. But you see, what the commissioners just told us is that whatever these rates are, they're going to become locked in once they've been issued by the federal act. And then anybody attempting to change from what they charged on the first issuance of permits is going to have a real hard time explaining that under the federal act, because it would be discriminatory treatment either above or below. So you see, what may be an insignificant amount for your company to pay to the university, if the university is charging at a very high rate, the university then in the future may have no choice when somebody wants to go across a half million acres of their land. And then all of a sudden we can find ourselves in a real pickle, because they can't afford to get there, and so we stop telecommunications efforts that should have gone forward. So, in other words, maybe somebody needs to look at these numbers to make certain that we're not painting the industry or this state into some very bad corners before this happens. So if you could get me the numbers on BLM and how they're being achieved and the numbers for the university and how they've been achieved, I'd sure appreciate that.
Yes, sir, I'll do that.
Barbara Williams, are you available? Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, Phyllis Johnson. Barbara was on at previous.
Mr. Chairman, this is Phyllis Johnson. Yes, I'm in Anchorage, and I am the Vice President and General Counsel of the Alaska Railroad Corporation. And I thought for my contribution to this, if it pleases you and the other committee members, I'll just share the railroad's experience as to how we got to where we are today, and then you can take that, you know, for what it's worth in your deliberations.
Sure, thank you.
We don't purport to be experts at it either, and we've kind of struggled to where we are now. And as I say, I'm a lawyer. I'm not either in the real estate department, and I'm certainly not an appraiser, so I'm just going to give you a synopsis of what I know about all this. The first fiber optics line that was laid in the railroad right-of-way was being negotiated and actually was a contract was issued for it right before transfer in 1985, and that was from Whittier to Portage and possibly on up to Anchorage. I don't remember right now, but it was with ATU, so I think it does come on up towards Anchorage. And that was negotiated by the Federal Railroad, and it was the first time they'd done it too, and it was, you know, a much newer process back then. And what they got, basically, as consideration for using their right-of-way into Whittier and on up along Turning an Arm, was a certain number of pairs of cable to be used. I think copper line was also installed. So they just did a in-kind sort of trade there. And then that was the subject of an ATU proceeding as to whether third parties could use it and so on. But there wasn't any cash consideration at all. And then after the state took over the railroad, in about 88 or so, I believe, Alascom, under the ownership of Pacific Telecom, so PTI, was the prime negotiator, negotiated a route down to Seward. And I was around at that time, and I remember the internal gyrations we went through trying to figure out how to charge for that. Because by that time, we kind of realized with all the APU proceedings and complications from that maybe this just getting this free use of the cable wasn't, you know, worth as much as we thought it was, and maybe we should start getting some cash consideration instead, too. And the real estate people at that time did some research with outside railroads, since they have corridors similar to ours, and got some forms, and that's where we kind of started with our current form that we use, and ended up charging, if I remember correctly, $600 a mile, period, you know, without any consideration as to what kind of terrain you were in, for example. And then nothing happened again until Alascom, basically, and UNET came to us close close to the same time in the middle 90s. And eventually we signed a contract with Alascom, who less than a year after signing, exercised their option to terminate. And so UNET became the first real kind of modern-day fiber optics permit. And as we were doing that one, and as I say, it was with Alascom first, we decided we'd, you know, try to figure out a little bit more about how this worked, and we hired an outside appraisal firm, and I believe its name was Allen Williston and Steele, but I can double-check that if the committee wants to know, who we discovered from other railroads and just general reputation outside was the preeminent appraiser of rights of way, corridors, because what we have is a corridor, you know, and that's a little unlike what the state has in the Division of Parks. It has a large chunk of land. It's a little more like what DOT has because its road is a corridor. So seeing as our statute directs us to lease our land for fair market value as determined by an appraiser or by competitive bid, whether or not we were doing a lease or a permit, it certainly seemed that, you know, this was a clear direction that we need to get appraisal advice on transactions like this. And so we, as I say, sought an outside firm with experience in that, and they associated themselves with a local, Alaska appraiser, so that they could have the benefit of the local insights in the land usage. And I know we have provided copies of, we've had a couple of appraisals now under that rubric, and I know we've provided them to the Senate Finance Committee and to various others. And it's a real education every time I look at it, and I certainly don't remember it each time. But that we went to those folks specifically to get educated on what's the market value, how do you determine market value of corridors that run through all sorts of disparate properties. And even though the figure of 50 cents a foot has been used here, without the appraisals with me, I can't say, you know, what the real figures are, but I do know from going through those appraisals before that that's probably an average, or it may be the high end, because I know I have looked at the various segments. These appraisers broke the right-of-way down into segments, and they applied several processes to their to the way they came to their value. They looked at across-the-fence values, as they say, of adjacent lands, and obviously across-the-fence value in downtown Anchorage is a lot different than across-the-fence value at Portage or at Healy or some of the more rural locations. And so there are different values within the appraisal for different segments based on what kind of locale they're in. And they came up with a, and besides the across-the-fence value, they looked at a use factor. There were several alternative approaches, but some of the things that stick in my mind are the use factor, which I believe is a reflection of how much of the whole bundle of rights associated with that property you have, if you have just the ability to lay a little line through there. The enhancement factor was another one considered, and that takes into account the fact that you already have all this land assembled. You do not have it, you don't have to deal with all those adjacent landowners like some people have discussed, you know, how much that can kind of tie you up and slow you down sometimes. We had the benefit of a whole corridor, that little ribbon all assembled, and they didn't have to deal with those folks. And that's worth something in appraiser terminology. And one thing that everyone, you know, might benefit from is an expert appraiser on right-of-way or corridor valuation talking about the subject to the committee or to some of the agencies involved. And that I think, certainly where the railroad came down, because we are supposed to lease at market value, and that's how we thought the best way to determine market value was, is talking to an appraiser. Now, the committee and the government, you know, have two things to think about, and we're kind of wrestling with both, it sounds like, from what I've heard going on here. Part is how you value it, just kind of almost in a vacuum, strictly speaking, what's market value. Then you've also got all those policy considerations that people have raised about whether you'll get infrastructure built if you don't discount somewhat the what might otherwise be a market price. And those are tough decisions to make, but those are, I think, two separate things. The railroad, with its mission to lease its property at market value, we didn't have to wrestle with that as much as some others. So that's kind of the total of our experience.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions? It sounded to me as though you said that the first time the railroad did it, you just took a share of the use of the cable. The next time was $600 a mile. Unless my math is off, that's about 11 cents a foot.
Your math is better than mine because I have no idea, Mr. Chairman, but you're probably right. I don't divide that well in my head anymore. But that's essentially correct, whatever that comes out to be. And there was also some usage involved with that $600, not as significant a usage as the first deal. And again, as I say, I've forgotten how many pairs.
Can you tell me, was that an annualized rate or was that a one-time rate?
No, that's annualized.
Well, that was annualized. So.
Yes, not a one-time rate, no.
Yeah, that's more money than we made per mile by running it.
Oh, and Mr. Chairman, I'm getting a question here, and so maybe I should clarify. And that is a pre-existing permit that dates from about 88 or 89. Now, our newest permit, as Ms. Anvik said earlier, have as basically their base amount, a dollar amount tied to fair market value. And it does vary a little bit because we got the other concession of 5% of growth, adjusted growth, as she pointed out. So it's a little bit of a hybrid, but it tried to have as its kind of lowest denominator something that was closely identified to fair market value. So the evolution kind of culminated in this ultimate figure that we have right now of a flat rate plus some percentage if business goes well.
Yeah, so when we say 50 cents a foot here, you're actually going to get, assuming the agreement stays solid and isn't disrupted by court action, you're actually going to get 50 cents plus a percentage of the growth per year, aren't you?
Yes, something more than 50 cents, we hope, yes.
And any idea what the projected growth may be?
I don't recall. I'm looking to see if any of the other railroad people here remember. Up to four. Well, there's a maximum also in the contract, Mr. Chairman. I don't remember what that is, but I almost think it's $3 million a year. And one of my colleagues is telling me that there were some projections, and we can furnish them to you, as what it was several million dollars a year that the expected amount could be, and increasing over the life of the contract, of course. The first few years it's expected to be small and not meet, you know, the minimum, or the that minimum threshold would probably be operative for a while until business really picked up.
Well, that minimum threshold, though, is the 50 cents?
Well, as I say, I'm not that good with figures, and I think the 50 cents is probably an average. It's stated as a flat dollar amount in the permit, and I can provide you that.
Yeah, do you have any idea what the flat dollar amount is?
Well, we have three separate permits in place now. One of them covers from Eielson down to Anchorage, and I'm pretty sure the flat dollar amount is around a million. But I really hesitate to say, Mr. Chairman, without
just,
that in front
just
of me.
For just for ballpark purposes, Ms. Johnson, let's say it's approximately $1 million flat rate first year and maybe for a few years thereafter. But the company does have protection built in there that it will cap out at a certain point, and you think that may be as high as $3 million.
Yes, sir. And there are provisions for reappraisal as well, which is one thing that came to my mind as we were talking about some of these other aspects under the federal act and, you know, being locked into...
Reappraisal, you said?
Yes, sir. It'll be reappraised, and certainly seems to me one possibility to consider is if you establish pricing based on appraisal and reappraise, you know, and treat everyone similarly situated in that manner, you probably allow room for some growth consistent with the federal statute. I'm not very familiar with that federal statute, though, so I don't know if that's possible.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that if the railroad treats all future competitors the same, which is that we're going to have an appraisal and we're going to have a step up and we're going to have revised appraisals in the future, then they're complying with the requirements of the Telecommunications Act because they're treating all like customers similarly.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And it's not always going to be this, say, 50 cents is the average of the rate right now. Well, appraisers recognize change conditions, and so 10 years from now, a wholly new applicant comes on the scene, and it may well be a dollar rather than 50 cents because the adjacent land values are higher. So you allow that flexibility to you know, recognize changes in condition.
Sure. What would you think of the state's policy of establishing a historic value for given parcels of land, and how would you imagine that will be treated under the Federal Communications Act should we ever wish to change any of them?
Well, as I say, I really don't know much at all about the Federal Act other than a very general parameter, and since we administer wholly different kinds of land and we have a corridor instead of a big chunk of land as they do, I don't think I'm very competent to say, to tell you the truth, and oranges.
Good dodge. No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have had a gentleman hanging on the line for some time. Mr. Kim, is it Jacobs?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Just identify your address and who you represent and go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kim Jacobs. I am a director of WorldNet Communications, Inc., which owns 65% of Alaska Fiberstar. The company which has constructed the fiber optic cable between Anchorage and Fairbanks along the corridor of the Alaska Railroad. Mr. Chairman, I'm speaking to you from San Francisco at the moment, from a hotel room. I'm also, just to let you know, a director of WCI Cable, which has constructed an interstate fiber optic cable system which runs between Anchorage and Whittier along the corridor of the Alaska Railroad, and it interconnects to an undersea fiber optic cable between Whittier and Valdez. WCI Cable is also in the process of constructing an undersea fiber optic cable between Whittier and the lower 48. Mr. Chairman, I've heard a number of powerful arguments today, and what I'd like to do is just, I have a prepared testimony which I would like to read to you, if you would give me that permission.
Right ahead.
WCI, which is WorldNet Communications, Inc., and WCI Cable, are recent entrants in the Alaskan telecommunications industry, and we've already spent and or committed to spend in excess of $150 million to the industry in connection with the state of Alaska. I'm testifying here today because I am very concerned about the state of Alaska's proposed policy to grant certain fiber optic rights of way across the state lands at a price of 6 cents per linear foot per year. This pricing policy, if adopted, would put Alaska Fiberstar and WCI Cable at a significant competitive disadvantage to other companies providing fiber optic capacity in Alaska. It would also appear to change our understanding of how Alaskan policy generally operates, which is one of a level playing field. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, you've stolen a bit of my thunder in some of the expressions you've used, but I will be probably stealing a bit of that thunder back if I could. Alaska Fiberstar's fiber optic cable between Anchorage and Fairbanks was constructed pursuant to a permit which requires a minimum price of 49 cents per linear foot per year, and this is with the railroad, and WCI Cable's interstate fiber optic cable between Anchorage and Whittier was constructed pursuant to a permit which requires a minimum price of 47 cents per year per linear foot. Both contracts were negotiated on the basis of market price. GCI and MFS Canass are constructing fiber optic cable and have an agreement to swap dark fiber, which will allow both companies to provide capacity between Anchorage and Fairbanks in competition with Alaska Fiberstar, as far as we're aware. If the state of Alaska grants rights of way to GCI and MFS Canass at the price of 6 cents per linear foot per year, then Alaska Fiberstar and WCI Cable will be paying a significantly higher price for rights of way between the same locations. Alaska Fiberstar and WCI Cable's cost of providing capacity would therefore be significantly higher than GCI's and MFS Canass cost of providing capacity, which as stated would result in Alaska Fiberstar and WCI Cable being a significant competitive disadvantage. We're aware that sometime, as you stated, in 1996, MFS Canass also agreed to pay an appraised price for the rights of way along the route of the transatlantic pipeline system. Now, after Alaska Fiberstar has already constructed the fiber optic cable between Anchorage and Fairbanks, and after WCI Cable has already constructed the terrestrial segment of the interstate fiber optic cable from Anchorage to Whittier, the state of Alaska apparently is considering a change of the policy for pricing rights of way and granting GCIs and MFS Canass's permits at the rate of 6 cents per linear foot per year. As stated, Alaska Fiberstar and WCI Cable have made and continue to make a very significant investment in the telecommunications infrastructure of Alaska. This infrastructure investment has been noticed at the national and international levels. Consequently, any discriminatory policy that is adopted will also be noticed both nationally and internationally. Also, it would be totally contrary to the direction that the telecommunications industry has travelled and continues to travel internationally, as is evidenced by the WTO agreement on telecommunications that was recently agreed to by the GATT nations. Instead of virtually subsidizing certain companies in preference to other companies, the state of Alaska should maintain its policy of having a healthy and equally competitive environment in the telecommunications industry. The only way to maintain a healthy competitive environment, in our opinion, is to have